The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're waking up on your Tuesday morning, phew, you survived the Monday after Thanksgiving. Getting back to work, that always is a doozy. Plus, if you keep these kind of hours, whew, you need a little pep in your step. Or some extra coffee. I've discovered that I'm drinking more caffeine now than ever. And I can tell you exactly when it wears off, too. I'm not the kind of person that can't drink it 3 hours before I go to bed. Oh, no. I am my mama's daughter. She can drink coffee an hour before she goes to bed and has no issues. Now, she's had sleep issues her whole life, and I wonder if that might be part of the reason that she wakes up and can't get back to sleep. But she's been drinking coffee since before I was on the planet. And she has passed along her love for coffee to me, though not until I was 30. I didn't have a sip of coffee until I was like in my early 30s. I wasn't interested. I had to discover iced coffee first before I would drink it on a regular basis. But the caffeine is necessary for these hours. And in the last year, because there's another person in the house, and because my other half and I are on opposite schedules, I rarely nap anymore. That's a tough thing. I hope my husband knows how much I love him. I have sacrificed naps for him for all intents and purposes. Very rarely nap. I used to do a critical Saturday evening nap. Sometimes I would lie down around 6 o'clock in the evening, maybe before the late game kicked off, whether college football, NBA, blah, blah, blah. But the beauty of the DVR is that you can watch anything on tape delay now, and of streaming, of course. So I used to lie down. I would work out. I would eat. I would do some chores and then have my shower. And around 6 o'clock in the evening on Saturdays, I would lie down. And I would plan for a 2-hour nap. Get up, do whatever else before I would get ready for bed. Officially, let the dog out. And sometimes that would turn into a 3-hour nap and then a 4-hour nap. And sometimes I wouldn't wake up until 1 o'clock in the morning just to find out the lights were still on and the dog needed to go out, although she was snoring too. And we would do that and we'd go back to bed. It would be the best sleep of my entire week on Saturday evenings because I had no reason to get up. That's the thing. It was great because there was no alarm clock that had to go off. And when it did go off, I knew that it wasn't a real alarm. So that used to be the best sleep I would get all week, and it would really recharge me for the upcoming week, but that's kind of gone by the wayside. And I'm not sorry because I waited a long time to be married, but it is one of those things. So yes, now I'm drinking more coffee than ever. Plus, I think the obnoxious light on the neighbor's garage has something to do with it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, halfway through this edition of the show. We're post week 13 in the NFL. We've been talking about Broncos and Browns and whether or not Jameis Winston has done enough to earn himself a starting job in the NFL moving forward, whether it's the Browns who keep him on hand. There are a lot of Browns fans that would say they wish the team had done that with Joe Flacco in this previous offseason. Maybe it's the Jets. Maybe it's the Giants, though I think the Giants are going to draft a QB, but can they get the one they want or get a franchise quarterback? Is it a team like the Raiders who still is looking for a stopgap because they can't quite get the quarterback they want in the draft? So we'll see. There are going to be a few openings around the NFL, though. I would say fewer than there were last year. We've got a lot of teams that are set at quarterback. Just looking at the NFL standings and running through them, and you never know where a situation might break one way or another. But we know that the AFC East, other than the Jets, is set. Josh Allen, Tua Tagovailoa, just got paid recently, and he's healthy, and they love him in Miami. And the Patriots have found their man in Drake May. In Pittsburgh, I dare say they're probably, unless it goes off the rails completely from this point, they're probably going to want to bring Russell Wilson back. It's clear he still has a few years left, and he's playing great football. He's rejuvenated there with Mike Tomlin and with Arthur Smith, and they're doing what they need to do to keep him healthy. So the Steelers, the Ravens, the Bengals, those teams are all set. The Browns, we'll see what they do about Deshaun Watson. In the AFC South, Texans, Jaguars are set. The Colts, I think, like what they see from Anthony Richardson. It's really about the growth. That's why they had to start him the rest of the way, even though Flacco is there, because they need to know what they have with him. And when you hear Shane Steichen, now granted, this is in front of a microphone, but when you hear Shane rave about what he sees from Anthony Richardson now in some of these critical game situations, they feel like he is getting smarter, getting more mature, getting wiser, and taking better care of the football. And then the Titans, I don't know with, I mean, Will Levis is still in his rookie contract, so I'm not sure what they do there. He is a young Jameis Winston, where he's constantly going for the home run ball. He's constantly going for broke. He sometimes chucks the ball around with his eyes closed. He's good for a couple of interceptions every game, though he can also make really dramatic plays as well. But it's such a roller coaster ride. And then I mentioned the Raiders in the AFC West, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Broncos, they're good. The Raiders still need a quarterback and not a revolving door. In the NFC East, Eagles, Commanders, Cowboys, if they move on from Dak Prescott, it's because they have something else in mind. Now, I don't know that I buy into the Shedeur Sanders thing, because they would have to move up in the draft and get him, or work a side deal with Deion Sanders and then give up a bunch of assets. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, Pete, that it's the Giants who draft number one overall. They are in no way going to make this easy for the Dallas Cowboys, and might decline to do a deal at all, even if it meant they lose out on Shedeur Sanders. But they would make the Cowboys pay through the nose. So the Cowboys are not going to move Dak unless they've got the plan behind him. And that would mean potentially Sanders. But then what do you have to give up? And they're already up against the cap and all that jazz. They still have to pay Micah Parsons. The defense is so much better with him on the field. I don't even know if they can swing it this year.
The Giants will draft Sanders before they ever traded him to the Cowboys. There's no chance that happens. I am confident enough to say there's 0% chance that ever happens. They will not give the Cowboys a quarterback.
So the Cowboys' worst nightmare would be if the Giants end up with a number one overall pick.
Correct.
All right. So the Cowboys probably are sticking with Dak only because they just paid him. The Giants will need a QB. In the NFC North, they're set. Lions, Vikings, Packers, Bears, good. Falcons, they've got Kirk Cousins and they've got his backup plan. The Buccaneers love Baker. I don't know about the Saints, but I can't imagine Jameis goes back to New Orleans. That would be odd. The Panthers, I think they're going to stick with Bryce. Now we're starting to see signs of growth from him as well, with the right people in his ear. He's on the right track. Now, there's still a few weeks left to go, and David Tepper is not the most patient owner, so we shall see. And then the West is set, unless the Seahawks decide to move on from Geno, but I don't know why you would. I mean, we know what Geno is. He's got a ceiling. He's lower reward, but he's also lower risk. Geno's matured. He's become a solid starting quarterback. And if you look around, you're the Seahawks. You're leading the NFC West. You're in no way going to be in a position to draft a QB. And I don't know why you would need to. Right now, you've got a Geno that's just solid. He's steady Eddie is what he is. And then the rest of the teams are good.
Well, I'll say this about the Rams, is that Stafford, what is going to happen with him? That's the question. Is he going to be, because there was some rumors about him going elsewhere at points.
I don't think so.
I can't see it. I think he's going to finish out his career with the Rams. But
I do too.
If he is elsewhere, maybe you could see a guy like Jameis in that system.
Well, Matthew isn't a free agent until 27. Though I don't know. Right. Well, I just can't imagine that the Rams would do that to him. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. If he wanted to go, and he may have a no trade clause. That I don't know either. I'd have to look. He may have a clause where he doesn't have to go where they would send him, so to speak. So we'll have to check about that. But he is 36 years old. He signed through 26. He's a free agent in 27. But a lot of times, if there's no new money, that means that you can part with him. See if I can find another. Let's see. I'm not for sure I'm going to do it while I'm here on the air. But I will attempt. Oh, here, maybe this. Let's see. Cap hit 20 potential. Okay, here's the potential out, though. The potential out is 2025. Because of the way they structured the contract, he could get out and they could get out before the upcoming season. All right, so there is the possibility there, but could you imagine going from Matthew Stafford to Jameis Winston? And they still have designs on making the playoffs. So I don't know that at this point, again, they're going to be high enough in the draft to get a profile quarterback.
Yeah, I think it's doubtful it happens, but it's something to put on the radar, at least the Stafford part of it.
That's true.
Yeah, who knows what they do in terms of their cap?
At the same time, he hasn't lost a step. He's still Matthew Stafford, right? He was never a running quarterback. He could move a little bit. He was mobile, but that's not his game. He's a pocket passer, and he's developed a tremendous... I mean, and think about the growth of their young receivers. You do not have a Puka Nacua who comes along the way he does without Matthew Stafford. You don't have that with Cooper Kupp. I mean, Cooper Kupp won the Triple Crown not that long ago, so... He's helping to bring along some of these young receivers. I just can't imagine that they want to move on unless he retires. I would think that they would give him that respect. He and Sean McVay have that rapport, and you can see what he does with young players, Kyren Williams included in there. These guys have learned the ropes and have become productive in the NFL immediately. Tutu Atwell is another one that we see every now and then. So I would think these guys, because of the productivity of the offense, that as long as Stafford is healthy and wants to be there, they're going to be good with that.
Yeah,
at 36.
Ultimately, yes. Yes, I agree with you on that. But you never know. Things that we've seen crazier things happen in the NFL.
So not as many quarterback openings this offseason or this next offseason as maybe what we had this past year. But there's always the chance that we could see musical chairs among QBs. At A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too, I believe that the ballot boxes have now been sealed. We are done with the voting for Monday MVP, and I wouldn't call it a landslide, but it was an overwhelming victory.
His heroics made us swoon this weekend.
I'm the best ever.
I am the greatest.
Now it's time to name the After Hours Monday MVP. I need a
hero. Here's the snap. Allen back to pass. Has time. Steps up in the pocket. Looks to tuck it and run. On his feet to the five and into the end zone. The Beast does it again. Josh Allen with his second rushing touchdown of the game. And the chance of MVP come up from the crowd as this one has been put to bed early.
This one feels a little bit different. You know, this early in the season, we still got 5 games left. So the cool thing about it, like, you get to go out there, we get to go out there, and we get to play free, right? There's really no repercussions for what we're doing, but at the same time, we're chasing the one seed. We understand that, we know that, and we got to keep getting better each and every week. So, but it's going to be fun. I mean, to go out there and play free and play relaxed and play loose, I think that could be a dangerous team.
Better than 50% of the vote, Bills quarterback Josh Allen, your Monday MVP, and maybe the NFL MVP frontrunner after the game that he and the Bills had on Sunday night in the blizzard in Buffalo. the trifecta. And you hear his rushing touchdown, which sealed it for the Bills against the Niners. Chris Brown on the call and Josh himself talking about a fifth consecutive AFC East title and why this one is different. Thank you for all of your votes. Coming up in mere moments, you'll hear the candidates for TD of the week. I dare say Josh Allen might be part of the mix there as well. It was really challenging to choose just four because we had so many go-ahead touchdowns by quarterbacks or running backs in the late stages of these week 13 games that were wild finishes. And gosh, we could have chosen three candidates from Browns and Broncos on Monday night. That's how delicious the game. Nearly 1,000 total yards, although we did have five turnovers, 11 plays that went at least 20 yards. Those are the explosive plays, the chunk plays, the plays that break open a game. So a lot of fun to watch that one. It was wildly entertaining. And so that brings us to the end of week 13. Unfortunately, also probably brings us to the end of the season for Kyle Shanahan's top running back, his bell cow, Christian McCaffrey, a knee injury after just four games.
I mean, I just feel for him. You know, it was a real frustrating year for him. He worked his ass off to get back to this point, and I think he was really feeling good and about to take off and just had that real unfortunate injury last night. So I know he's as crushed as anyone, but he'll get through this. He's a hell of a player, hell of a person, and an unbelievable 49er, and he'll be back stronger than ever next year to help us.
It's just one of the tough injuries the Niners have suffered this season. I think it's ludicrous also to anyone who would believe that Kyle Shanahan's job is in jeopardy or he's on the hot seat. That's dumb. They've made the Super Bowl multiple times since he's been there. I know they haven't won. They've lost to the Chiefs, so I think there's no lack of respect in being up 10 points in the Super Bowl, even if they couldn't protect the lead. But without Christian McCaffrey and Jordan Mason actually hitting IR as well, their offense is so completely different. What is the plan for the running back position?
We have Grendo, obviously, will be up. We got Patrick here, who's on our practice squad, who will definitely be bumped up now, who was on our roster earlier in the year before Christian came back. And we'll most likely have to look for another.
He refers to rookie Isaac Grendo, who had at least one breakout game. I remember it was a primetime game as well. Patrick Taylor, the one he's referring to, is on the practice squad, and they will look to sign someone else. But there is no replacement for CMC, just like there's no replacement for Nick Bosa. And, of course, they're without Brandon Ayuk, who also tore his ACL. They're missing a bunch of pieces. And so this is a tough season for Kyle and the Niners. And also, I'm not sure if you heard the story or saw the headline. What else they're dealing with, which is really sad, is that the infant son of Trent Williams and his wife was born stillborn. And I appreciate that Kyle mentioned this when he was doing his Monday phone call with reporters. He talked about them as a family and how they're grieving along with Trent Williams. I can't imagine this is... It's one of those unthinkable situations that families have to go through. But yeah, Trent and his wife announced they had a son on November 24th, but he did not survive. So over the weekend, his wife said they found out that he was actually stillborn 35 weeks into her pregnancy, and they had lost the twin earlier in the pregnancy. So it wasn't just the loss of the one boy that they ended up carrying to term, but it was the loss of a twin as well. So they lost two babies, and Trent Williams is trying to play football. They had some different diagnoses in the womb that made the pregnancy complicated, but I don't believe that it would make it any easier, right, to say goodbye to your babies, whether you had the chance to know them and their personalities or whether you're grieving the loss of them and the potential. And so I'm thinking of them, definitely praying for Trent and his wife and their family, because as I say, that's the type of unthinkable grief that there's really no preparation for. So the Niners, their family, they're going through a lot right now. Football, maybe not the most important thing today, Now, by the time they get to the weekend, of course, they do have to focus on jobs and there's a lot of contracts on the line. In no way is the season lost, though their playoff hopes are on life support, but there's still a lot for them to play for. So you're going to see them have to soldier through. And this is something that a lot of teams do when they get saddled with just really difficult injuries and adversity. And that's going to be the case with the Niners. But to think that they would make a change at coach is ridiculous. We know the Chicago Bears did make a change at coach. They become the third team to fire a coach in season after the debacle that was the loss, the final minute of the game against the Detroit Lions on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, first game of week 13. We haven't really had a chance to talk about it because we were off last week and there was so much happening on Sunday. So we're going to get to the Bears and whether or not they'll keep their GM, that becomes the decision of the front office or the ownership above him. And what do they do about a coaching search now? The Bears are in a good spot when it comes to their quarterback, but they need to find leadership. They need to find the right teachers for him. They need to find a guy who they believe can build the right culture there in Chicago. And it just didn't happen with Eberflus. And there was becoming this really loud groundswell for making a change there. So the Bears are the third team in the NFL that's working with an interim head coach the rest of the way. I say that the NFL is contagious. And also a copycat league where you see one or two coaches make a change in season and suddenly it becomes easier for you to do it. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were more in the final month of the regular season because these teams can then get a jump on restructuring and their coaching search, depending upon how they do it. 855-212-4227. Has Jameis Winston earned a starting spot in the NFL? Is he among the best QBs in the NFL? A little bit later on the show, we've got the reaction of the Texans and now the aftermath, too, of Trevor Lawrence and that ill-fated hit by Azeez Al-Shaair. A lot of people were saying Al-Shaair, but it's Al-Shaair, Azeez Al-Shaair, the linebacker for the Texans, who was ejected for the forearm shiver to Trevor's head and neck. D'Amico Ryan's weighing in on it as well as a longtime defender in the NFL. Glad to have you with us. If you're waking up on your Tuesday, good morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
1 minute to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Touchdown! Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Southern Zelfing into the end zone.
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, give us a call at 855.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
212-4227, the Seattle Seahawks.
Third down and 7 from the Seattle 9. Hall stays in the backfield again, 3 receivers near side. Adams is slotted on the right. Blitz is coming, throw inside. It's picked up. Leo Williams coming near side. He's running like a racehorse. He's at midfield, turns upfield, and blockers. Holy smokes, are you kidding? Leo Williams is going to take it in for a touchdown. Seahawks. The Seahawks mess up a kick return. They dump it on the defense, and Leo Williams says, I got you covered. Picks it off as he drops back into coverage. Comes up the near sidelines in front of the bench. Picks up blockers and takes it all the way in for a touchdown. Are you kidding me? 21-13, and Williams is going to do it any way he can to help his team win.
The Minnesota Vikings.
Second and 2 from the Cardinals 5. Takes the snap, 4-man rush. Sam to the right, caught, and touchdown! He's showtime! And Aaron Aaron Jones saved his best for last. We're tied at 22.
The Buffalo Bills.
First and a goal from the 7. Allen under center. Takes the snap. Quick hitter. Thrown behind, but somehow caught. And now lateral to Allen. And reaching for the pylon. Are you kidding me? It's a touchdown. Unbelievable. A catch by Amari Cooper. A lateral to Josh Allen. And he runs the remaining 5 yards for the score. Have you ever seen that one before?
The Denver Broncos.
Knicks, with a pair of receivers on each side, takes a shotgun snap, drops 3 yards into the end zone, loads it up, deep ball down middle of the field. He's got Mims there. Mims is gone. 40, 30, 20, 15, 10, high stepping into the south end zone. Touchdown, Denver, 93 yards.
Wow, and that's not even the entire catalog of dramatic touchdowns from week 13. We could have chosen 3 more from Monday Night Football probably because of the 2 pick sixes as well as the 70-yard Jerry Jeudy strike from Jameis Winston. But these are the touchdowns we have chosen. You could always write in your own candidate. Steve Rabel with the call on Seahawks radio. Leonard Williams against his former team, the Jets, rumbling 92 yards for his first career interception. What a moment as he drops into coverage, which is also not something he does on a regular basis. Ball gets tipped to him, and he takes it to the house against the Jets. Aaron Jones finding redemption for the Minnesota Vikings after an earlier fumble. He had to spend some time watching on the bench. Also dropped a touchdown pass, but hauled in the one that mattered the most from Sam Darnold. 5 yards out, but a minute 13 to go. The go-ahead TD for the Vikings as they secure win number 10. Paul Allen on Vikings radio. Yes, yes, of course. Josh Allen, the TD trifecta. He throws one, he runs for one, and he catches one. Courtesy of an Amari Cooper lateral. Chris Brown with the call in the blizzard in Buffalo. Josh Allen is one of a kind on Bills radio. And then Denver, 93-yard touchdown catch and run by Mims. I just love his last name. Marvin Mims. He's the M&M guy. Bo Nix connecting with him, throwing a bullet up the middle of the field, and only Mims could grab it. In fact, one of the DBs for the Browns made a gamble and nearly picked it off. I'd have to go back and look and see which one it was, but nearly picked it off. It got there a split second faster than what he could get to it. And so the ball was perfectly thrown in a bullet form, a perfect spiral from Bo Nix. Dave Logan with the call on Monday Night Football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We invite you to be part of the voting. The polls are up on our Facebook page. I'll get to it quickly, but on Twitter at Amy After Hours. Wesley, what? Wesley Reed.
You should have did that another
Thank
time.
You.
I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I wanted to make sure that whatever you were saying with me, I passed along. Wesley Reed is the dude who nearly picked off the ball.
No. The live Reed.
Oh, the live. I was like, I don't know Wesley Reed. I'm not familiar with him.
That's a good one.
So, different kind of Wesley, as in this portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial, not Wesley Reed. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at WesleyReedFinancialGroup.com.
I'm sure Wesley Reed is a good person.
Just kidding. WesleyFinancialGroup.com. Like, who's Wesley? I don't know who Wesley is. And then all they could think of was, oh, that's the guy that nearly picked off the pass from Bo Nix. And I'm racking my brain trying to come up. I knew it was Denzel Ward, actually. I wanted to confirm that by looking back at the highlight. Yeah, he nearly picked off the ball. He went flying through the air just after, a split second late after the pass had reached Marvin Mims in the center of the field. So not Wesley Reed, but Denzel Ward, the great cornerback for the Browns, who nearly picked off that ball.
I just picked a horrible time to tell you.
Wesley
that.
Reed. And for the people out there who don't know why his last name is Reed, well, maybe some point you'll figure it out.
That's right.
So coming up, there, by the way, there is a Winston Reed on the Browns. He's a linebacker, so I guess there's a chance he could also have dropped in coverage and would be flying through the air. So it could have been a read, but not his number. Denzel Ward is the guy who gambled and just missed. Great candidates for TD of the week as we usher in a Touchdown Tuesday. You can check them out on our show Twix, and soon I'll get them up on our Facebook page. But this is not a laughing matter. The Bears have fired their head coach, Matt Eberflus, after a sixth consecutive loss, and I would say the optics of the botched final minute in the game against the Lions. Now, granted, the Bears had been out of that game, and then boom, because they made it look respectable and had an opportunity in that final minute, well, then it looked even worse, right? But according to Ryan Poles, he saw frustration, that's the word that he used, in the Bears locker room after that loss to the Lions. And then, of course, Matt Eberflus was fired on Friday. And kind of unfortunate because it was mere hours after Matt did his media availability, what's required by the NFL. And then, seriously, on the heels of that, he probably had just gotten done in the press room. He finds out that he's getting fired. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about an organization that mishandles things on the field and mishandles matters off the field. But according to Kevin Warren, who's the CEO of the Bears, they actually didn't decide to fire Eberflus until after the press conference had started, or at least it was close enough to the press conference that they felt like they couldn't just yank him out of that routine, though. It's kind of crappy, right? You throw him out there to be a bit of a sacrificial lamb, answer questions about his job status, only to find out hours later that, in fact, he is being replaced. But I don't think it's that shocking. We see what happens with the Bears on the field sometimes. We've seen what happens with them when it comes to, I don't know, the future home of the Bears, their front office and the way that they handle personnel matters. So it kind of starts at the top and then trickles down. And there needs to be more discipline, of course, more accountability, and just a culture in which employees are treated as equals, are treated as valuables. Valuables, that makes them sound like they're possessions. They're treated with value, I should say. Anyway, Ryan Poles, he was talking about what he saw in that locker room and expressing his concern about the players and the state they were in following that Thanksgiving loss.
It's important to always have the pulse of the locker room and understand what's going on. Because, you know, the one thing that I can say is our players and our team, they've played extremely hard through adverse situations. You don't want a situation where that starts to crack and you don't see the same effort and the same energy. So we're always being aware of the environment and taking that into consideration.
He went on to say that he loved the progress they made from year one to year two with Eberflus, but felt like they stalled and even backtracked in year number three, which is why they're making a change. And I know he was a defensive coordinator with the Colts, so he came from the defensive side of the ball. And early on, the defense was playing well, but wasn't able to sustain that. It's a lot to ask, of course, when you're breaking in a rookie quarterback and they feel like they put pieces around him, right? They completely pulled apart the roster. They went 3-14 in 2022. They were 7-10 last season. Right now, they're sitting in a spot where maybe, I mean, I would think they would get back to that point, but they're at 4-8 now, so they might not. So to not make an improvement after getting what you believe is your franchise quarterback and putting pieces around him, that's a major disappointment. And they wanted to get to jump on their coaching search. Now, the major question on Monday was whether or not Ryan Poles would keep his job as the general manager. CEO Kevin Warren was also at this press conference.
Next item I want to make sure we're clear about is Ryan Poles is the general manager of the Chicago Bears, and he will remain the general manager of the Chicago Bears. Ryan is young, he's talented, he's bright, he's hardworking. He has done everything in his power on a daily basis to bring a winner to Chicago. And as leader of our football operations department and as our general manager, Ryan will serve as the point person on our coach for our upcoming search for a permanent head football coach.
The CEO, Kevin Warren, raving about Ryan Poles. Young, talented, bright, hardworking. He's done everything in his power to bring a winner to Chicago. And it is worth noting as well that the Bears started out 4-2. They were right in the mix there. It's early, but they were in the mix in a very tough NFC North. Hadn't started playing each other at that point. But if you look at their schedule, even though they've lost six straight games, it's easy to overlook that four of them were decided by a single score. So four of them single digits, which means that they've been close. Now, sometimes they've rallied late, and so it's made the game appear closer than it was. But this is a team that they feel like has the pieces in place. Not that they're perfect. They still need to work on the O-line to be sure. They've got some holes as well on defense. So I know that they have other moves they want to make. But the leadership, if you're that close and those games are not going your way, oftentimes it points back to the leadership. It points back to the decisions that are being made on the sidelines in those close and late situations. And at least they know they have Caleb Williams and they're thrilled with him, but more changes coming in Chicago. At Amy After Hours, also on our Facebook page soon to vote for your TD of the week. The poll is up at least on Twix. So straight ahead, a little bit of college football after what was a nutty rivalry week over Thanksgiving. Glad to have you with us. Oh, and so many flags that were planted at midfield and teams that are getting fined because that really matters to the students. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Well, aimed Jameis Winston with a monster night, four touchdown passes, threw for nearly 500 yards, but three costly mistakes.
First and goal at the Denver 2. Winston with Nick Chubb to his left. Play fake. Winston throws in the end zone and throws it to Cody Barton. And Barton's got a chance to house call. Barton down the east sideline. They catch him at midfield.
Call courtesy of the Broncos Radio Network. Last of three interceptions for Winston, and the only one that didn't go back for a pick six is the Broncos outlasted the Browns 41-32.
I know I'm better than this. I know. I'm just praying for the Lord to deliver me from pick sixes. Like, that's not me. Like, a phenomenal game. Offense, do some great things, but I messed it up.
Jerry Jeudy, a career-best 235 yards receiving and a touchdown, while Bo Nix threw for 294 and a score. Broncos improved 8-5. 49ers continue to be the walking wounded. Christian McCaffrey headed for IR, a PCL injury in his knee. Backup Jordan Mason also going IR, that with a high ankle sprain. Bears have already pulled the plug on the Matt Eberflus era, but team president Kevin Warren letting everyone know that has nothing to do with GM Ryan Poles as he remains in place. Lions running back Jahmyr Gibbs accidentally posted more than a dozen code words for their offensive protections last week on social media, but head coach Dan Campbell doesn't seem all that concerned. This courtesy of 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit.
I know what it is, but I'm like, you know what? We might as well just put everything out there. I don't really give a crap. I mean, if we're going to lose because of code words, then we're not good enough anyway. So I think we'll just post the whole freaking player and every code word we've got. And it doesn't matter. It's not going to hurt us. It won't affect us.
Elsewhere, the Saints lost Taysom Hill for the rest of the season with a torn ACL. Rams claimed corner Emmanuel Forbes Jr. off waivers from Washington, a first-round pick in 2023. NBA, T-Wolves pound the Lakers 109-80. Rudy Gobert 17 points, 12 rebounds. Celtics rolled the Heat 108-89. Hawks outscored the Pelicans 124-112, and the Bulls dismantled the Nets 128-102. Hockey, the Stars double up Utah 2-1. Devils pound the Rangers 5-1, and the Maple Leafs, they erased the Blackhawks 4-1. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, sports fans, Zach Gelb here on the Infinity Sports Network. Check us out 24/7 on your local affiliate or on the Odyssey app. Download it today.
Absolutely, I imagine this being very hands-on. And yeah, we do have a vision. We absolutely have a vision. And, you know, I think we are under no illusion about the landscape of college sports as well. I believe deeply in the unique value proposition of Stanford and Stanford Athletics. It's the greatest athletic department. It's the most successful athletic department in the country. We're excited for football to do its part at the home of champions. But we're looking for the best and brightest. I think we got a lot of them. We're looking for tough kids, and we will be competitive in recruiting and retaining the best talent out there.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Tell me you recognize that voice. The voice of Andrew Luck. He's back. You guys, he's resurfaced. I love this. It's a brand new position that we're seeing in college athletic departments all over the country. It's called the general manager position. Essentially, it is what it sounds like. Someone who is managing the contracts, managing the money, managing the agents, the business of football now, because that's the way the college landscape has changed. And Stanford is bringing back one of their most successful quarterbacks ever in Andrew Luck, and he will be the GM. He had essentially gone dark. He disappeared, and now he's back, which is incredible. I'm so excited about that. Can't wait to hear more of Andrew Luck. That was him on College Game Day, essentially answering questions about his new role at Stanford. But this was something that I had never heard of until the most recent football offseason when I started to see news headlines about Alabama hiring a GM. And yeah, it's crazy, but the agents, they demand a lot, right? And the players need someone that they can go to. The agents need someone they can go to. The financial aspect can be overwhelming for coaches, so someone else really needs to handle that. And this will be Andrew Luck in the role for Stanford. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, we'll cram in a few of these college football stories before we get to the top of the hour. But you know, coming up later on this Tuesday, the fresh set of college football playoff rankings, meaning that we'll see the second to last, I suppose these would be the penultimate, right, college football playoff rankings, because we are right on the cusp of championship weekend. That all happens this weekend, and so we'll get to see who the automatic bids are, who get the buys, all that jazz. But right now, if you're looking at the college football playoff rankings, the OSU predicament, meaning Ohio State, it's kind of tough after losing to Michigan. A lot of people calling for the job of Ryan Day as head coach.
No, I mean, everybody, you know, wants to win this game in the worst way, you know, and nobody wants to win it more than we do. And it's our number one goal every year. And so when you don't, you know, do that, you know, there's disappointment and frustration. And so, you know, I don't blame anybody for being upset. I'm upset, you know, more than anybody.
So Ryan Day's job may very well be on the hot seat, or his butt may be on the hot seat. But the Ohio State loss to Michigan, that's one that many people can't stomach. It'd be one thing if you didn't make the college football playoff, though that would be extraordinary as well for a team with such high expectations. But to lose to Michigan, now granted they're defending champions, but they're not anything like what they were. To lose to Michigan in this rivalry game is really unforgivable in the eyes of people on both sides of it, whether you're talking about the Buckeyes, whether you're talking about the Wolverines. For Ryan Day to have to stomach this again, well, you're again thinking about maybe an unforgivable sin, and Ohio State may decide to move on. Now, it's not as easy as all of that, but as we get closer to the expanded 12-team playoff, I mean, this is top five conference champions, ranked by the committee, and then you've got the next seven highest-ranked at-large schools. Will Ohio State qualify somewhere in there? Still a chance to be sure, but to be on the outside looking in at even the Big Ten championship. And then you've got this whole situation with the fight and the flag planting at midfield. It happened all over college football this past weekend, and certainly you see it multiple times during the year. Sherrone Moore, Ryan Day having to answer questions about a brawl at center field.
It was emotions on both sides. And our guys, I didn't see they had the flag, and guys were waving around, and their guys charged us. So it was emotion on both sides. It can't happen. So, you know, rivalry games get heated, especially this one. It's the biggest one in the country. So we got to handle that better.
Yeah, I mean, each coach has got to handle it in a way that keeps his players under control. And certainly you were going to see Ohio State players make it to midfield after the waving of the flag. It wasn't just Michigan planting a flag, kind of nondescript moment. It was a big celebration. It was a brouhaha there at midfield as they're waving the flag before they plant it to attract attention and to make it as public and as noticeable and as obnoxious as possible. Of course it was going to start a brawl. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.